At a million other choices, we discuss some dark and troubling topics. If dark and troubling is not your thing, mine might not be the right podcast for you. If you like your dark topics discussed without pesky ads and are looking for some additional content from me, you can sign up for the exclusive feed. The link should be in the show notes, and if not, you can find me on redcircle.com. I research each case myself, and I do my best to use a wide variety of sources, preferably directly from court documents when they're available, to ensure that the information is as accurate as possible. But I cannot verify the truth of all reporting that is publicly available. So this episode has been produced for information and entertainment purposes only and should be taken as such. And with all my legal and publicity stuff out of the way, let's listen to what words I will inadvertently mispronounce today.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I know the answer to the question that everyone keeps asking. I know why you did this. You did this simply because you were not in a cage.
But was she dead on the day I arrived?
Or... she was dead when you killed her.
I agree with the family. I hope you die in prison as well.
It disgusts me that you are allowed to exist.
We are tackling the murder of Amber Takaro today, which is a blight on Canadian missing persons cases. Now, before I start this, I just want to say that I do have a deep respect for homicide investigators in our city. I have met some of them. They have obviously been involved with our family. I have found them to be professional, very caring, all the things that you would want in homicide detectives. And I've actually met a few RCMP homicide investigators as well and found the same thing with them. But Amber's case is an example of when particular RCMP officers have biases. And as much as I respect the individuals that I have met and shared space with, and as much as I believe strongly in the police as being helpful to the community and committed to making us safer, the RCMP in particular has some issues. And those issues always seem to come up in cases of Indigenous people. So it's hard not to think that the RCMP as a whole needs to work on some stuff. And unfortunately, I can't really share Amber's case today in the hopes of it being solved. But really, it's more to spotlight the issues that we have with missing persons reporting and investigation in this country at times. Amber Alyssa was born on January 3rd, 1990. She was adopted by Andrew and Vivian, whom everyone calls Tootsie, Takaro as a baby. And the Takaro family already had 4 sons, and Amber was welcomed in as the only girl and the apple of her mother's eye. Andrew and Vivian were members of the Miskew Cree First Nation, which is a band of about 2,800 Cree people living across Alberta, mostly in like Fort Mac, Edmonton, and Fort Smith. One of Amber's brothers, Billy Joe, actually will become later the chief of the Miskiw Cree First Nation, and he won his second term in 2023. Now, at the time that Amber was like a baby, the family was living in Fort Chipewyan, and then they moved to Fort McMurray. Now, Fort McMurray here in Alberta, we nickname it Fort Mac. So if you hear me call it Fort Mac, that's Fort McMurray I'm referring to. Now, Amber had dreams of one day becoming like a big star, but she wasn't particularly good at like dancing or singing, but she could make people laugh. And Tootsie, I don't think she ever doubted that someday her daughter was going to have a claim to fame. And in 2009, so when Amber was 19, she gave birth to a son, Jacob. And as much as she wanted to branch out on her own, sort of buy her own house, Amber was struggling with kind of getting the money to do that. Now, Fort McMurray being an oil and gas town, it's really expensive there. So she had reached out to a place called Unity House, which is a not-for-profit. Now, it's filed as kind of like an emergency shelter for women fleeing domestic violence, but they have resources and support services for single mothers as well. Now, I'm not sure if Amber had struggled with any domestic violence in her, like with her relationship with Jacob's dad. It doesn't really talk about it anywhere ever in any of the reporting. But regardless, each time that she had gone to Unity House, which was a total of 3 times, she always wound up calling her mom to come and get them. And she was always welcome into the family home with her son. So I'm not really sure what the issues were with Unity House. It's only mentioned by Stories of the Unsolved, which they appear to have done quite a bit of research on Amber's case. But her mom never mentions any of it in any of the interviews that I've seen. But apparently it was at her last stay in Unity House when she met a woman named Evangeline, and then they became friends. And so in mid-August of 2010, this woman who is known as Evangeline, like, her name is out there as Evangeline, but she's not actually, her name was never actually supposed to be published. So that could have been like a leak, and now everybody's kind of running with it, or it was just kind of a moniker that was given by somebody back in the day, and then it's just kind of stuck around. So we're going to go with Evangeline. I have no idea if that's actually her name or not. She came by Amber's parents' place to see Amber and then invited her for this weekend trip to Edmonton to go with her. Now, the purpose of the trip has been speculated on a gabillion times, but at least in Amber's mind, kind of like the way it was relayed to her mom, was that it was just kind of to get away for the weekend. Now, Edmonton is a big city, especially compared to Fort Mac. It's got a big giant mall there. There's lots to see and do. Now, Tootsie wasn't really thrilled about this idea of going like with a woman that she kind of didn't really know all that well. They didn't have a lot of money, so it would have been kind of an expense. And being that Amber's First Nations, like, Tootsie's not dumb. She knows that Indigenous women in their early 20s are particularly vulnerable. So she's not really liking this trip at all. And Vivian had been particularly clear with Amber kind of all along that hitchhiking was something that she should never, never do. And that's probably an obvious statement to you. Not since before the 70s and the days of Ted Bundy has it been really safe to do hitchhiking, especially for young women. So, and like, I get that. But in rural communities, like particularly in remote areas where the people kind of lack the resources to own their own vehicles, there's no cabs, there's no Ubers, nothing like that. Hitchhiking is just kind of how you get around. Or at least you have to like get a ride with somebody, you know, who does have a vehicle that's going in the direction that you want to go to. So although Tootsie knew that Amber and this woman had booked a flight to go to Edmonton, which was about $152 in today's money. Like they have these commuter flights that fly several times a day between Edmonton and Fort McMurray because it is an oil and gas town. And then there's camps out there that a lot of people work at. Now, they planned on staying in a place called Nisku, which is just outside of Edmonton at a motel because it's cheaper than getting a hotel in the city. But to get around, like, even though Amber had told her mom, like, no, we're not going to be doing any hitchhiking, they probably were going to, and it would have just involved some hitchhiking. So after the flights and this motel had been booked, there really wouldn't have been a lot of money left for sort of cabbing it to and from like the airport into the city. Like, they're not renting a car. But now Tootsie did feel a little bit better that Amber had insisted on taking Jacob with her. So, like, because by all accounts, Amber was a dedicated mom. She wasn't going to be partying or doing anything that's going to get her into any kind of trouble. So shopping at the West Edmonton Mall is probably the most probable and reliable reason that I could find for why they would go on this trip. And so they made it to the motel in Nisku around 8 a.m. on the 18th of August. And from there, the three of them did go into the city to do some shopping, likely got there by hitchhiking, and spent most of the day shopping at the mall. Now, if Amber had purchased anything at the mall, we're likely never going to know that for a reason that we're going to get to. But later that afternoon, the three of them returned safely to the motel, probably also by hitchhiking. Again, it's just the way they would have only, the only way they really, really would have had to get around. It would have felt really natural for them to do them. And I really don't think either one of them would have had the money for a cab. Like, it is about $50 for a cab to get from the mall back to Nisku, and that's like without traffic. And Ubers and ride shares were not actually in Edmonton until March 1st of 2016. So it is my best guess that they would have done some hitchhiking. Now, the only information we have is that sometime later, Amber wanted to go back out to Edmonton for whatever reason. We just have no idea. And Evangeline agreed to watch Jacob for her. Now, why she agreed to do that, and why she didn't want to go with her, where Amber was wanting to go, it's all a complete mystery, like to this day, and you'll see why. But what we do know for sure is that Amber left the hotel room around, or motel room around 7:30, 8 o'clock that night, and then got into a stranger's vehicle being driven by a man. Now, Evangeline didn't see the vehicle that she got into, at least we don't think she did. No one came forward witnessing her getting into a vehicle, but we know that she did that because of some stuff that comes out later. But at that time, no one seems to know where she was going, how she planned on getting there. Now, there were reports that she had gone out to get food. And then there were other reports that she was just really excited to get to visit Edmonton. Getting food actually seems like a little bit more likely because she had actually already been to Edmonton to the mall. Now, there's nothing to say that Amber was a party girl or the type to have like gone off partying by herself. And her mom had offered to take Jacob. So if partying was kind of on the to-do list in this trip, like she would have quite happily left Jacob behind. She had left Jacob behind with her mother before. Like her mother was one of the only people that she had ever trusted to take care of Jacob. So she would have left him behind if she was going to be doing anything like that.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ensuring your baby gets the nutrients they need to support their growth and development is a top priority for every parent. That's why millions around the globe have turned to A2 Platinum as the formula they trust. A2 Platinum Premium Infant Formula is nutritionally complete with whole milk as the first ingredient. Their A2 whole milk comes from specifically selected cows that naturally produce milk containing only the A2 protein and no A1. With 30-plus select nutrients, A2 Platinum is specifically designed with tiny tummies in mind and without worry of harmful chemicals. Quality and safety are the number one priority for A2 Platinum. Plus, they are clean label Project Purity Award certified. Join millions of parents and choose A2 Platinum for your little one. Right now, for a limited time only, A2 is offering podcast listeners 25% off their first purchase when you use promo code PODCAST25 at checkout on Amazon or at A2Platinum.com. Again, for 25% off your first order, go to Amazon or A2Platinum.com and use the promo code PODCAST25.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
And Amber and her mom had been communicating back and forth for most of the day by text, and everything's all good. But after about 8 o'clock, she stopped responding to her mom. Now, reports also vary about who contacted who. But the next morning, when Amber hadn't returned to the hotel, Evangeline had called Vivian, as Tootsie, as she prefers. And Tootsie immediately called the RCMP to report her missing. Now, she was told that she couldn't report her missing until she'd been gone for 24 hours, which is not true. That is not a law here. And number two, that she was probably just out partying and she'll turn up soon. Well, Mom knew that Amber wasn't going to be leaving like her little guy behind, especially with someone that she barely knew. And she just said, like, look, I still want to report her missing. So the officer grudgingly took her information, kind of did absolutely nothing with it. I mean, he did put her on the list of people that are missing, but no one went and looked for her, even bothered to stop by the motel to talk to Evangeline about it. Nothing, like literally nothing. Now, another strange thing that isn't widely reported is that according to Lore Lodge, Tootsie had called Evangeline the night before when Amber had first stopped responding to her texts, and then Evangeline had told her that her and Jacob were asleep. Now, this is likely either, number one, not true. It never happened. Number two, that Evangeline knew that Tootsie wouldn't have wanted Amber to have gone off to Edmonton by herself, so she was kind of covering for her. Or three, that Evangeline had lied because she was in on something. Now, the other thing that Lore Lodge reports on that I find a little bit strange is that the next morning, Evangeline told Tootsie that Amber had gotten up in the night and left without saying where she was going. So again, this is likely either not true, it's true, but she's kind of trying to cover for Amber, or true that Evangeline is in on something. Now, it's kind of funny about the stuff that Lore Lodge reports on unsolved cases, which is mostly what they cover. It does appear that they do a very, very deep dive, like a lot of research, which is great. I think that's really cool. But they tend to have theories about cases that I think kind of border on conspiracy theories, and I wasn't able to really find their sources, so I'm not sure where they got that information. And sort of what I've learned from listening to reporting on the Delphi trial, which of course I'm unable to watch or listen to because of the judge in that case, that whoever is reporting on it, they have kind of their own opinion, so you get their takeaway from the day's events. So there's no way to really sort of form your own opinion by watching, like, I don't know, body language, stuff like that. So you kind of have to take a little bit of what other people report, especially when there's theories, with a bit of grain of salt. Now, there's definitely some missing pieces in the reporting, as it is a still an active case. There is a lot of information that's being held back from the public. But it appears that Evangeline traveled back to Fort McMurray with Jacob and returned him to Tootsie, but without Amber. Now, Tootsie later learned, and I think it was about 2 weeks later, she had heard absolutely nothing from the RCMP about her daughter, which, of course, they weren't really looking into. But on August 28th, the RCMP had gotten some kind of report, like a phone call, something like that, that Amber had been sighted, or rather that the person that called thinks that they saw someone that looked like her at a gas station somewhere. So rather than look into that and make sure that it was true and that Amber was safe and sound, they just closed the file and took her off the missing persons list. They didn't bother to tell Tootsie about this tip or anything. They just took her off the list. Well, Tootsie was like, hell no, put her back on the list. And she had to actually fight to have that done. And they finally did it. I mean, I guess they kind of figured, well, maybe a mom would know best, that she'd been in constant contact with her up until minutes before she goes missing. She never has any more contact with her. She leaves her son behind. Maybe her mom would know that she's actually missing. But she wasn't actually put back on the list until September 3rd. Because according to them, she'd been found. She wasn't missing anymore. So, right, like a phone call from someone that thinks that he saw someone that looked like her, they just take that as truth and they just take her off the list. So that had to be extremely frustrating for Tootsie and Andrew and all her brothers. But the RCMP are like, yeah, we got nothing. Like, there's just no leads, nothing. And actually, it turns out that that wasn't true. So, oh, and the other thing I should tell you is that Amber's suitcase was turned over to the police, likely by Evangeline or maybe the hotel. And it just sat there for like months. Like, they didn't open it. They didn't process it. They didn't look for any receipts or any kind of tips on where she could have been wanting to go that night. And when Tootsie had traveled to Edmonton herself to at least look at the suitcase and do some of her own investigating, it turns out that the RCMP had thrown her suitcase and all of her belongings away without processing it for any evidence, which is so strange to me because even if they felt like she was off partying, like she's going to need her belongings again at some point when she returns for them. And if she does that, like if she comes back and says, hey, where's my stuff? I mean, at that point, they could probably arrest her for abandonment or something because she left Jacob behind. Like, it's just strange to me that they would throw out her belongings. Now, Tootsie feels like even if there wasn't any evidence in the suitcase, like, wouldn't they think that maybe for sentimental value, she would want her daughter's belongings returned to her? But it gets worse. I have no idea when they actually discovered this information, but it was not released until like publicly for 2 years after Amber had disappeared. Now, according to Amber's brother, they discovered this information about a year before that. So after Amber hadn't been heard from for about a year. But at the time that Amber was in Edmonton, one of her brothers had been picked up and was being held at the Edmonton Remand Center, which is like a jail, like a holding jail, and had made a phone call to her that night. Now, they know that he had made the phone call because if she had phoned the jail, they would have just said, sorry, like you can't just talk to whoever you want. But he could have made the phone call and it would have been recorded and everybody would have known like this call is being recorded. So now I'm going to play for you the call. Like, this is not the full call. The full call is 17 minutes long. They only released 61 seconds, and you can kind of see that it's a little bit pieced together, but I'll play for you the call, and then I'm going to read the actual transcript for it in case there's pieces that you missed.
Where are we by?
We're just heading south of Beaumont, or north of Beaumont.
We're heading north of Beaumont. Yo, where are we going? No, this is a... Are you fucking kidding me? You better not take me anywhere I don't want to go. I want to go into the city. Okay. Yo, we're not going in the city, are we? No, we're not. Then where the fuck are these roads going to?
50th Street.
50th Street, are you sure?
Absolutely.
Yo, where are we going?
50th Street.
50th Street. East, right?
East.
Over town.
Bravo.
We believe that rather than driving into the city of Edmonton, the male drove south and east of Nisku into rural Leduc County. And subsequent to this phone conversation ending, no one has seen or heard from Amber. We believe the male driver of this vehicle has information that may assist police in finding Amber. You will now hear the audio clip a second time. Please listen carefully, and if you believe you recognize the voice of this male driver, please call investigators with that information.
We're just heading south of Beaumont, or north of Beaumont. We're going to 50th Street. Absolutely. 50th Street.
This recording is available at the CARE website at kare.ca and also at the Alberta Missing Persons website, albertamissingpersons.ca.
So Amber says, where are we by? And he says, we're just heading south of Beaumont or north of Beaumont. Amber, we're heading north of Beaumont. Yo, where are we going? And he says, just no, this is a, and he says, the back road. And she says, are you fucking kidding me? No, I'm not kidding you. Now she says, you better not be taking me anywhere I don't want to go. I want to go to the city, okay? And he says, the one end of the street. Yo, we're not going into the city, are we? And he says, we are, we're going. No, we're not. Yes. Then where the fuck are these going to? And he says, to 50th Street. She says, 50th Street, are you sure? He says, absolutely. And then she says again, yo, where are we going? And he says, 50th Street. She says, 50th Street. He says, 50th Street. She says, east, right? East. And then there's some unintelligible stuff. You could hear her say something about over something, something now. And then the man says the word gravel. And then it gets unintelligible. And then the call ends abruptly after that. Now, this call was released publicly in August of 2012, asking that if anyone recognized the man's voice to come forward. Now, again, here's the thing. The whole call is 17 minutes long, but 61 seconds of it is what's released. And again, you can tell it's kind of pieced together. Now, to give you some kind of idea of the areas that we're talking about here, I'm going to try to remember to post a map on Instagram. I usually forget about that stuff, so maybe remind me. So Edmonton, we'll say, is kind of like the center. And Beaumont, which is mentioned in the call, is south of Edmonton. It's about a 34-minute drive south. Nisku, where Amber is, where she was picked up, is also south of Edmonton. It's about 29 minutes drive south of Edmonton. Now, Nisku and Beaumont are pretty much side by side. So, like, Nisku is about 11 minutes west of Beaumont. So when the man says they're going south of Beaumont, that's probably actually the truth. But then he quickly changes that to no, no, north, which would be the direction that he should be going to if he's taking Amber to Edmonton. But he first said south of Beaumont. Now, do you want to know what else is south of Beaumont? And Nisku is of this little place called Leduc, which put a pin in that. So when this call came to light, RCMP, they know that Amber's in a car with a man that she doesn't know and that she clearly doesn't trust. And she doesn't recognize where he's taking her. Now, remember, she had been to Edmonton earlier that day, so she should kind of have an idea of at least what things would look like. And this is around 8 o'clock at night in August here in Canada, like northern Alberta. So it's still light out, so she could see what's kind of going past her. And she probably would have known within minutes of getting in the car that they're going the wrong way. But they have this information a year after. They still don't do anything. They still don't look at it like even like she's a missing person. They're still just like, oh, she went off partying. Even though it's clear on this call that she's scared. She's scared and she doesn't know. She doesn't like she's being taken somewhere she doesn't want to go, but they don't look into anything. And then, of course, they release the call like a year after that. So 2 years after she's been missing and basically saying like, hey, maybe the public can do our job for them. Now, I just want to circle back again to the reason for Amber and Evangeline's trip. There has been some speculation that Amber went to Edmonton to do like sex work to make money. But why would she take her son if that was the case? And if every person who went on a weekend trip from Fort Mac to Edmonton did sex work, I mean, I don't know what kind of sex ring you think we're running out here. And the fact is that Fort Mac actually is more prevalent for sex work because of the fact that there's those work camps out there. So men are sometimes away from their families. So if she's going to do, like, if this is her thing that she's into, she could make more money and do it probably more easily in Fort McMurray. And even if she was doing that, like even if that was the whole point of her trip, like what does it matter? Does she deserve to get murdered for that? I mean, I would hope that nobody would think that. Anyways, she didn't do sex work. And the hitchhiking, I mean, yes, we all know it's not the wisest decision, but I mean, if I got murdered every time I made an unwise decision before the age of 25, I'd be dead like many times over. And again, if it's something that you're used to doing, which you wouldn't have normally done like in numbers, like there would have been the three of them, I don't think you think anything of it. Now, there's also speculation that in the call, she sounds inebriated. Now, she doesn't, actually. She sounds Canadian with a Cree accent. So I think people just need to settle down a little bit. It's just, unfortunately, that is the way us Canadians speak sometimes. Now, as to where she was going, it could be that she was going to the Edmonton Remand Center to see her brother. Now, this might explain why Evangeline was being a little bit cagey about it with her mom and why she would have left Jacob behind. I mean, she does, 50th Street does get mentioned in the call, which is like a really long street. But if she was going to the Remand Center from Nisku, you actually bypass the city pretty much. You just kind of circle around the 216. Now, 50th Street is actually Highway 814. So it's directly south to Beaumont. And then it kind of turns into 50th Street as you go north, entering into the city limits. So based on my assessment of the maps, it seems like as soon as she got into the car, he was taking her where he wanted to go, not where she wanted to go. So if it's true that he really was north of Beaumont, that would lead into 50th Street. Like, so you would be going into Edmonton. And it doesn't really matter where it was that she wanted to go. She didn't make it there. So whatever she wanted to do, there's no point in speculating on where she was going, at least in my opinion. And she had posted on Facebook when she'd got to Edmonton that she was there. She'd posted her number for people to text her. So she could have gotten a text from someone and asking to meet up at a restaurant or something. So, I mean, we're never going to know. And in the end, it really doesn't matter because she never made it there. So they released this call on August 28th, 2012, and then they asked if anyone recognized the voice to call in. And there was three women that called in, all giving the name Pat Carson. Now, he's a rather well-known sex offender, and he owns a ranch in Onaway, which is northwest of Edmonton, so it's a little bit far away. But he was cleared as having like an alibi or something like that. And kind of to be fair to him, his MO was a little bit different. He targeted people via Kijiji to work on his farm in exchange for, like, I don't know, weird things. It is a little bit strange, though, that three women who didn't know each other all named this guy. But he was, I don't think he's ever been connected into anything like murder related, and he was cleared. And I don't think he's the guy. But seeing that he's a sex offender, I'm going to name him anyways. Now, he goes by Pat Carson, sometimes Bill O'Brien. So if you see any Kijiji ads about a ranch in Onaway, looking for people to come out and work for free in exchange for weird things, stay away. And then to further fuel some conspiracy theories here, only 4 days after the call was released, a group of horseback riders out for this leisurely stroll in Leduc, which is, yes, the place I said to put a pin in earlier, so that is south of Nisku. Well, they came across a human skull on a rural property. Now, this property was a farm located off of Highway 623 and Range Road 241. Sometimes you'll hear it referred to as Highway 241. It's Range Road 241. And it's actually known as Raleigh View Road, just east of the Leduc convenience store. And Leduc is, again, just south of Beaumont, which, didn't the guy initially say? South of Beaumont. Well, the skull did turn out to be Amber's. At least it was matched to dental records. That's another thing, we put a pin in that for now. Now, its discovery did launch a 2-day ground search of the area for some more clues. They never did find the rest of her body. But as Amber was no longer considered a missing person, her case was taken over by RCMP's care unit, which is still technically missing persons, but it's just where cases are more likely to be homicides and involve vulnerable populations like Indigenous women. Now, what's interesting about this exact area where Amber's skull was found was just a few kilometers away in various shallow graves, the remains of four other Indigenous women, all last seen hitchhiking, had been found. Edna Bernard, she had disappeared on September 22, 2002. Katie Ballantyne, she went missing April 28, 2003. Dolores Brower, last seen May 15, 2004. And Connie Oatenbright, last seen May 9, 2004. Just really interesting. It kind of seems like there's a serial killer that kills every spring and targets vulnerable young women. Now, the problem is, For example, in Dolores's case, she was last seen in 2004, but her remains weren't actually found until 2015. So a lot of evidence had been lost. And although all the women were last seen in Edmonton, they were found really close to where Amber was found. Places can kind of become dumping grounds for bodies. Like if they're remote enough to not be seen, but they're easy to access by vehicles, I guess killers kind of found out about it. The Globe and Mail gave an example of Connie Graninetti. Now, she had been shot to death by her nephew, and he put her really close to where another body had been found earlier that year, kind of in hopes that the police would connect the two cases. Now, that was in Fort Saskatchewan. Now, the other thing that's interesting about where she was found, it's about a 34-minute drive from Nisku. Now, Amber's full phone call was 17 minutes, which tells me that she was on that call for most of that last trip of her life. Now, after CARE took over the case, they did put up billboards asking for information, and they moved those billboards every few weeks to kind of make sure as many people as possible could see them. And tips came in, but nothing was ever found or really, I don't know, looked into or released, whatever. Now, they may have looked into some things, but we actually don't know because we just don't know what they were doing in the background. Now, Andrew and Vivian had had enough by this point, and on March 20th, 2014, they filed a complaint with the Chair of Commission for Public Complaints about the Leduc RCMP. Now, unfortunately, Andrew passed away that same year, but Tootsie carried on in Andrew's absence trying to get some answers. Now, her complaint included numerous issues with the investigation into Amber's disappearance, particularly the whole fact that they downplayed it right from the beginning, that it was anything to even look into, the destruction of her property, and that they just shared absolutely nothing with the family about anything that they were looking at or what they'd found. Now, meanwhile, while that whole matter was being looked into, Vivian went to Ottawa in February of 2015 and met with a bunch of really big wigs, expressing support for a national inquiry into Canada's missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And in 2017, her son Paul, or Amber's brother Paul, and his wife participated in the national inquiry, basically telling them that the RCMP, had they not had biases towards Indigenous people, Amber's case might have ended differently and maybe even been solved. Now, a full 4 years after Vivian had filed her complaint about the RCMP, they responded in 2018 after this independent investigation was done, and they wrote a 120-page report saying that they found that the officers involved were not properly trained, which is really strange that they would be the missing persons unit, but not trained in investigating missing people. That the investigation basically had a bunch of issues, the officers had not followed proper procedures and guidelines, and that the 4 years that it took them to actually interview Evangeline was unreasonable and unexplained, and that numerous officers failed to get in contact with the woman that Amber had been traveling with, that would be Evangeline, at the time of her disappearance. As well, it was found that relevant contact information for potential witnesses was not recorded. It was also found that inaccurate information about the case had been released to the media. But they didn't actually find that the family's claims of racial bias had any validity. Whatever. And then in the end, they found there was 24 inadequacies that they found, and they made 17 recommendations to try to improve some missing persons cases. And then in 2019, a formal apology was issued to the family on behalf of the RCMP by Deputy Commissioner Curtis Zablocki.
At the beginning of this investigation, the RCMP was not the police service we strive to be. On behalf of the RCMP, I am truly sorry. I fully acknowledge that in the early days of our investigation into Amber's disappearance, that it required a better sense of urgency and care. We agree with the Civilian Review and Complaints Commission that in 2010, our Leduc detachment's initial missing person investigation was not our best work.
Now, the Takaro family refused to accept the apology. They said that it felt very forced. They were really put off, really upset by the fact that Curtis Sablonski got up and left abruptly from the press conference, saying he had a previously scheduled thing. They just really took offense to that. That was basically like, yep, we're up on to the next thing. And I don't blame them. It's upsetting just to watch.
An apology needs to be heartfelt, not just words. You know what I mean? See, look again, they just proved again. They're just getting up and leaving the next appointment, right? I mean, they're the ones apologizing, but yet they can get up and walk away. What does that say? Like right now, I'm very, very angry. It's always after the fact, you know. The apology was done because they had to. I don't know. I'm hoping, and like I said earlier, that they are working on Amber's case. Not only Amber's, like for all the other missing and murdered boys and girls. And what do we really know? And I've had mothers, where I've talked to mothers where it's always the same thing. You report your daughter missing. Oh, she's out partying. She'll come back. Like, that needs to stop. That is not right, you know? And I mean, they are someone's child, someone's mother.
And then in September of 2019, so the family actually did a bunch of paperwork to try and exhume Amber's skull for DNA testing, because they, at this point, were not sure that it was actually Amber's skull. They have no trust in the RCMP that they would be telling them anything truthful. Maybe they were just like, oh yeah, it's her.
Over the weekend, the remains were identified through dental records. And with the assistance of the Edmonton Medical Examiner's Office and RCMP Forensic Identification Services, care investigators became involved. We consider the circumstances surrounding Amber Tuckerell's death to be suspicious.
And like she had only been identified by dental records. And in Canada, we don't exactly have the best record for providing the best health care to Indigenous families. So what they wanted to do was take the skull and match it with Jacob's DNA to confirm or deny that it was actually her. I have no idea where that actually went. That was in 2019. Whether they were successful in having that exhumed, I haven't heard anything about any new updates about that. Now, according to the RCMP, Amber's case is still open. They haven't made any arrests, obviously, and they've never identified the man that's voice is heard on the call, other than that he's a person of interest. So Vivian's been raising Jacob. He would just be starting his teen years now. Vivian really wants to make a point of keeping Amber's story out there.
The RCMP or whoever takes the information, when a parent reports their child missing, put yourself in their shoes and think, what if that was me? What if that was my child? And I get told, oh, they'll come home. They'll come home in their den party. Just give that a thought. It's going on 13 years. We still have no answer. We still don't know who Amber's killer is.
We heard a mom who's hurting and a family and a community that's devastated by what happened. So I would say this, the people that are out there that know, that have information, no matter what they think that is, I would ask them to come forward as well. This investigation is not going, it's not stopping, and this family's commitment to making change is not going to stop either. So I would like to reassure you that from the top of this organization that we're committed to moving this investigation forward and we'll continue to do so.
So I'm trying to do that for her. Now, as far as the theories, I just can't really get into any of that because basically the theory is that she got into a car with a man that she didn't know. He drove her out to Leduc, killed her in some manner, that manner being homicide by unspecified means, and that it's an open investigation. So there's no other information other than that 61-second piece together phone call from a 17-minute call that was going to be released as evidence until this matter goes to court. That's just the way it is here in Canada. There's not going to be any FOIA requests. No one's getting access to the investigation files. And it's just going to sit because there's no external DNA has been found. There's no real clues to go off. So there's nothing to tie a person of any kind of evidentiary value, even if they could identify the voice on the call, which would be scientifically impossible if the person denies being that person. So we need a confession with details that only the killer would know. There's no genealogy DNA to be done here. So the best that we can hope for in this case is that the cases of Edna, Katie, Dolores, and Corey are connected somehow to each other by DNA. And if we can connect those cases to each other, the statistical probability is that whoever killed those four women also killed Amber. So find their killer. You likely found Amber's killer, but I don't think we'll ever be able to actually prove it unless the person confesses, and even a confession is not absolute proof of anything. Now, the Globe and Mail had done a bit of investigating into the trail of sort of some possible serial killers working in the Edmonton area. And they identified 49 likely homicide victims that were all Indigenous women between the years of 1986 and 2016. Now, of these 49 women, almost all of them were last seen in Edmonton, like within the city limits. But the remains had been found, and I counted a total of 12 of them found east of the city, 3 of them west, and 6 of them south of the city. Now, there's 3 on the map, really close together, just east of Leduc, like right around where Amber was found. But it doesn't say whose body was whose. But they are definitely in what I would call a cluster, whereas the ones on the east look a little bit more spread out. Now, of the 49 cases, only 11 have actually been solved. But the solve rate for non-Indigenous homicides is around 90%. So that was the cluster fudge of investigation into the disappearance of Amber Takaro. It is an ongoing case. So please, if you have any information, go to the RCMP care unit and give it to them. Hopefully they are working on the case in the background and they're actually working it. They're not just throwing stuff away and not following up on anything. And I'm going to be back again next week. In the meantime, you know what to do. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.